Welcome back to the Ed Morrissey Show podcast. Joining me, as always, the Prince of Twitter, the Regent of RedState.com, Andrew Malcolm, at A.H. Malcolm. That's my best Let's Get Ready to Rumble voice. I think that might
be. Oh, yeah, I think that's great. That's wonderful.
Let's get ready to rumble!
I love the way the volume builds, yeah.
And let's get ready to rumble because, you know, we're recording this on Monday, but as this is going to go up on the site, tonight will be maybe the only debate that's going to happen now in this election cycle. Well, there's going to be a vice presidential debate. I don't think anybody really cares what Tim Walz and J.D. Vance have to say to each other. But I think a lot of people are going to be paying attention to what Kamala Harris and Donald Trump are going to say in each other's presence. They won't be talking to each other because Donald Trump won the muted microphones contest already, Andrew.
And that's good for him.
It is, because it imposes some discipline on him that he might not ordinarily impose on himself. And it worked out very well for him in the Biden debate.
Just perfect, yeah.
You know, we're going to start off talking about this. Mike Pence had a essay. Or it wasn't even his essay. It was Philip Wegman actually talked to Mike Pence, and he was talking about what Mike Pence told him. And Mike Pence pointed out that he thinks that Donald Trump will probably do pretty well because he was disciplined and he was smart in the debate against Joe Biden, especially when Joe Biden started falling apart. Trump really focused on Biden's performance because he knew Biden wouldn't be able to respond to him, and stayed away from the personal attacks, stayed away from venting his spleen too much, especially in the first half of that debate. Maybe the second half wasn't quite as disciplined, but Pence was arguing, look, people forget that Donald Trump actually had a pretty good debate. They forget about it because Joe Biden had such a bad one, but Trump actually had a strategy, and he actually stuck to it. And he thinks he's going to do the same against Kamala Harris.
I hope so. Trump was helped in the first one by, I think, two things. One, the muted mics, and two, no audience for him to play to. That feeds his enthusiasm. And when it's like a stand-up performer. If the crowd reacts to this, then you do more of it, and that's what he does. And his base loves that. But if you're trying to reach people who are not in his base, they're not so appreciative of it. I think there's a danger for Trump, but for the Republican side, in that Kamala Harris has been portrayed as being so bad, such an airhead, that if she comes out and is merely almost competent, everybody will go, wow, okay, wow. Because the bar is so low for her now in expectations. I was just looking this morning at some of the collected videos of her explaining what a hypothesis is, explaining the computer cloud, and most recently... Oh,
the cloud one was hilarious, by the way.
It's up here, Ed. Don't worry. Yeah. And
it used to be on servers, but it's not on physical media anymore. It's in the cloud. It's like,
that's right. That's right.
Oh, no, no, no.
And and the latest one, which you and I exchanged messages on the lipstick on the Starbucks coffee lids.
Yeah, that was interesting.
She's talking about White House meetings and how often she's the only woman there, which I thought it was supposed to be a very equitable administration, but apparently not by her own words. And she has her Starbucks coffee with the white lid, and her lipstick gets all over it. And then she takes it off and she says, can't we do something about these white lids? So we know, of course, that she's focused on the serious policy questions that presumably are being discussed. And she wants a different colored lid for her Starbucks coffee.
That's the takeaway. And by the way, isn't Rachel Levine part of those meetings? So she can't, you know. Doesn't Rachel Levine use lipstick? I mean, come on, man.
Why? Okay. So let's end this meeting with let's all vote for Kamala to get a better brand of lipstick. To think that anybody would be interested is so revealing in her thought process, well, lack of thought process. And she's trying to be, I assume, well, she's being herself, but she's trying to be human, you know, and talking about these first world problems of lipstick on the coffee cup lid. And people are going, well, what?
Used to be lipstick on your collar.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Remember that song, Lipstick on Your Collar?
Yes, I do. Yeah. And she's been coached by, I understand, some Hollywood people. And she's got policy people. And when she's traveling, the White House schedule says she'll have policy meetings with staff and aides. And that this is all the rehearsal, rehearsal, I guess. But I'm not sure that she put some policy things up this week on her website.
Just overnight. We're recording this on Monday. And I have a post coming up about this. I mean, it's basically... It's almost just a cut and paste from Joe Biden's agenda. I mean, there's no real specifics in here. She's still talking about price gouging in the grocery industry, which runs off of 1 to 3 points of net margin. She still doesn't know the difference between cost and price. She still is thinking that she's going to solve a problem with a housing shortage by goosing demand with subsidies and stimuli, which is the exact opposite of what you need to do when you have a shortage. You don't goose demand; you try to fix the supply, which also, by the way, is largely not a federal problem. It's largely a state and local problem. The federal government really doesn't have much to do with it. But all of this is the same nonsense that Joe Biden's been saying. I mean, this is, I would say that a good portion of what went up on the website came out of the last two State of the Union speeches that Joe Biden delivered to Congress, this year's and last year's. And that's all it is. It's just aspirational gobbledygook. Now, it's at least something, right? I mean, it's at least something. It took 50 days for the major party nominee to actually even list the aspirational agenda for her campaign. But this is the crux, Andrew. She's the incumbent in this race. I know that they want to make Trump the incumbent. They want to say, well, we need a new way forward from Trump, but they've had a new way forward for 3.5 years.
Right. A new way backward.
She is the incumbent. More to the point, she's flogging the incumbent policies that they've had in place for 3.5 years, that they have congratulated themselves over for 3.5 years.
Yeah.
This is not new. And I mean, this kind of brings us to that New York Times Siena poll that came out over the weekend, right? Which shows Trump going back in front in a New York Times Siena poll. That's kind of interesting, right? In the first place.
Yeah.
But also that I think it's like 68% of voters want change. And only 25% of the voters in that think that Kamala Harris represents change. And I think a 53% majority think that Trump represents change. And that goes a long way to explaining why he's back out in front in this New York Times Siena poll, why Nate Silver is trying to trying to do semaphores, right, to warn Democrats. Trump's actually going to win this thing. I mean, that's not exactly what he's saying, but he's saying that Trump is now the favorite, and not by a small margin now, based on the polling that he's seen and the trending that he's seen, is that her campaign, the post-convention bounce, whatever it was, is gone. And we're back to the status quo ante, which is that people don't like this administration and want to change back.
Yeah. And the thing that puzzled me, and you're the poll pro, but the thing that puzzles me is if so many people want change, and so many people know that she's an airhead, and so many people don't like what Biden's been doing, why is it close?
Well, okay, so I have two answers for that. One is that if you take a look at where Trump's at today, as opposed to where he was at the same point in the cycle in 2016, he's way ahead of his marker in 2016, and he won that election. And he's a little ahead of where he was in 2020, and he only barely lost that election. I think that the reason why, though, it's as close as it is because people don't like Trump. He's not a likable guy. I'm not saying everybody doesn't like Trump, because clearly he has a few million people who just love him to death. And that's fine. That's great. You probably have a couple million at least that love Kamala Harris too. And maybe 50 people outside of Scranton that like Joe Biden. Maybe, I don't know. He turns people off. Harris turns people off. Biden turned people off. And that's part of what you got going on here. And, you know, a year and a half ago, or maybe a year and a quarter ago, I wrote something to the effect of that the first party that nominates somebody else is going to win the election. Well, I need to caveat that, because somebody else meant somebody else besides the two people who are already in office, right? If the Democrats had, did you see Nancy Pelosi today?
No, why?
She's on The View, and Anna Navarro is asking her, you know, I understand that the Bidens aren't really speaking to you anymore. And it is, you know, and that it's because there's this idea that you pushed him out of the race. And she's, I didn't push him out of the race. I didn't want him to withdraw. I just wanted them to change the way the campaign was running. It's like, no.
No.
We're getting at
he knows I love him.
He knows I love him. I love him so much that I love it that he's gone. He's the most consequential president ever. He's, you know, Cincinnati. She didn't say Cincinnati, but that's,
you know,
what she was getting.
Back in 99, she sent word. I was working on the Bush first presidential campaign. And she sent word that she really wanted to meet Governor Bush. Just, it's really important. And so I set up a meeting. Governor Bush was willing. I set up a meeting for them in a meeting room at the Fresno airport. And Mrs. Bush and George Bush were there, and Nancy Pelosi and her ubiquitous daughter with her camera. But we didn't allow the camera. And I don't think Pelosi wanted it either. This was sort of a back channel meeting. And this is no exaggeration. I have never seen anyone in my life so much of a suck up. I mean, if there was a diabetic in the room, they would have fallen into a coma. It was just this. Oh, Governor, I've heard so much about your great work working with Democrats. And I mean, Texas is so lucky to have you. And I mean, you and Laura. And it was just, as you can see, I'm having trouble describing it because it was so unctuous. And of course, being a real pro politician, George Bush was, you know, very receptive and talking with her, and she looks forward so much to working with him and so on. And, you know, he's one that wants to get stuff done. So he's not falling for ideological stuff. So, you know, he worked very well with the, was it the speaker? In Texas, there was, was it the lieutenant governor who was a Democrat, I think? Or the speaker, anyway, he was a Democrat, a fierce Democrat. And Bush worked with him. And they ended up being really good co-workers to get things done for Texas. And when the guy died, and I forget his name now, which isn't good, I'm sorry. But when the guy died, he actually had a request that Bush give the eulogy at his funeral, which the governor did. I don't think he was the governor then, but he did. So it wouldn't be surprising that Bush would be willing to work with Nancy Pelosi, who wasn't the speaker then, but was obviously an influential Democrat. Anyway, it was only like 10 or 15 minutes, and so it was so completely phony that ever since then, I've not believed a word she said. You know, you take everything she says with a, okay, there's a point to this. She's maneuvering for something.
Yeah. I don't recall that, but I mean, it sounds
why would you recall it? You weren't there.
I wasn't living in Texas at the time, but
this wasn't a public meeting. This was a private back channel meeting.
No, I meant the Texas House. Oh, speaker.
Yeah.
You can find that out later, but this is Pelosi, right? I mean, she's just like you said, unctuous beyond measure,
fierce. Remember her ripping up Trump's speech. She's not speaker anymore, but obviously she's pulling a lot of strings, and someday historians may find out what she really threatened. I doubt she threatened revealing all the corruption that the Bidens have done, but you know, I maybe putting out all the bad polls. I don't know if she'd do it, but that was the threat, to get Biden out. And of course, that her doing that would have sullied his legacy.
Yeah, his legacy. He didn't get out when LBJ did. I mean,
no.
They pushed him out after he'd already won the primary, after cooking the primary for him so they could cover up his cognitive decline.
Yeah, exactly right. And lying, and Kamala was a total part of that. And I don't know if what pressure there was for Johnson to quit, but he was such a smart politician from his Senate days that he knew it was not going to work. So he pulled out of his reelection effort. I think it was March or April.
Well, it was early. It was after New Hampshire.
Yeah.
Early after New Hampshire, right? Because
McCarthy didn't beat Johnson, but McCarthy had a better showing than expected. And there was a parallel this time. Dean Phillips ran in New Hampshire. Now, he didn't have as good a showing anywhere near as McCarthy did, but the fact that a Democrat was openly challenging his party's guy. I'm worried about the debate that by being a simpleton, she'll look stunning, or at least give the media ammo to say, well, she didn't do as bad as we thought.
I kind of agree with you.
Not a president.
And that's what Pence warned about too, is not to underestimate. And I think he was meaning that in terms of, don't cast it so that, you know, if she just shows up, she's breathing and she's looking in the correct camera, you know, she won the debate sort of thing.
Yeah. You want to be just like college football coaches or pro coaches the week before a game. You're not saying, oh, these guys are patsies, we're going to cream them. No, you're not. You're saying, well, you know, they're pretty good. They got the new recruits and they're, you build them up. And so that way, at least, if you lose, it don't look like you didn't know they were good. And if you win, you won, but you don't build, you don't tear them down so that your victory is meaningless. No, don't.
Now, Andrew, I had resolved before we started this that we weren't going to talk about the Cleveland Browns yesterday. So let's not go there.
Oh, please. Not my owner. Jeez, Pete. Pathetic. Well, no. They didn't ask me, and it wasn't my $230 million that paid for Deshaun Watson, Jackson, whatever his name is. But what a waste.
Well, you don't even know how good he could be because they don't have an O-line. I mean, that guy was buried under Cowboys all day long.
You think that the general manager might be aware of this? He's stocking up wide receivers for a guy who throws two interceptions. Jeez, Pete. That's pathetic. And, this is how bad it's become, Ed. I don't watch the games when they're available. I tape them. And then if they win, I'll watch. If they don't win, I just can them. There's nothing I'm going to enjoy less than watching my brother. Because, I started following them in 1954 when the Indians lost the World Series in four games. And my dad and I had tickets to the fifth one. So that's when I said, baseball, out of here. So I started following them then. And they were fantastic. Just fantastic. I mean, this is pre-Super Bowl, but they were champions all the time. Just in fact, Ed, I'm going to slip this in before we move on to something that matters. The Browns came from the old All-America Conference, and they won the championship the 4 years that conference was in existence, 46 to 50. They joined the NFL in 1950. Everybody's going, the Jets won the Super Bowl after, what was it, seven seasons in the NFL? The Browns won the championship the first year in there. And it was against the team. It was against them, the team that had fled Cleveland, the Rams. And it was sweet. Lou Groza kicked a field goal in the last 30 seconds, Ed, and I'm still savoring the win. Can you imagine coming into a new league and then just dominating it? And they had Otto Graham as quarterback. And the story is that Paul Brown, who was the coach, in the first game in the NFL, the Eagles was against the Eagles. And the Eagles coach had been saying, this is the old NFL where you ran the ball all the time. The Eagles coach said, they're always throwing the ball and so on. And that's how they can win. Well, Paul Brown told Otto Graham before the game, we're not throwing a single pass today. And they didn't, and they beat the Eagles in their first NFL game. And the reporters after the game, they asked Paul Brown, the Eagles were saying that you were throwing a ball. He said, we didn't really have to. I love it.
And let me relate this back to the debate, because Donald Trump could have a moment like that, right? If he just sticks to the issues and says... every time she says, we need to do this, all he has to do is say, why haven't you done it already? You've been there for 3.5 years. You didn't like the way it was going on. Why haven't you done it already? Because each candidate gets 2 minutes to rebut and on each response from the other candidate. And that's, if he sticks to that plan, at the end of that, reporters can come up to him and ask him, you didn't really get personal with her. You didn't go on the attack. Did you feel like you needed to be? And he could just say, no, I just didn't think I needed it to.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I didn't need to throw a pass. I just ran over her.
there you go.
Yeah, that's a long way around for an analogy, my friend. But
that's a good one. That's a good one. I have not thought until this year that debates really mattered. I mean, they're cosmetic. At June mattered. Obviously, it changed history. What you remember from past debates, you remember what Dukakis said about the military? No, but you remember a zinger, right? You remember, I'm not going to hold youth against my opponent. You remember, I knew John Kennedy and you know John Kennedy. You know the zingers, which are rehearsed and practiced and pre-written. But this year, like you say, June mattered. It was historic. But it was historic because how it appeared, which is what television is good at. Television is great at appearances. Remember that wonderful picture of John Edwards getting his hair just right for the debate? Never mind content. I'm going to look really good. And it's understandable. The first debate, Richard Nixon lost in 1960 because he didn't shave and he didn't use makeup. He thought that was phony. Well, he looked awful on television. That's what television does. It's how it looks. And Joe Biden didn't look good.
Well, no. And Harris is going to look better. I think everybody needs to be prepared for that. She's not going to foam at the mouth. She's not going to stare slack-shot at the wrong camera and stumble around getting on and off the stage and need help. I mean, it isn't going to happen. Yeah. So, people need to set their expectations accordingly. But I don't think she's going to come across very well. And, you know, Mike Pence said, you know, she acquitted herself well in his debate, but that's because he kind of took it easy on her. Also because Mike Pence understood that vice presidential debates really don't matter.
You know, I mean, and this is a tricky thing. In June, Trump wasn't harsh. I think the worst thing he said was, I don't understand what the president just said, and I'm not sure he does either, and went on to what he wanted to talk about, which was perfect, absolutely perfect. But you have to be very careful. Talk about appearances, because this is male-female, and you can't have the slightest look of condescension or anything. You just can't do it, because that'll take attention away from everything that she can't do. Yep. That's what she's counted on her entire career, is being a woman. Yep.
And that's the horse she's going to ride all the way to the White House. You know.
But so, speaking of columns,
yes, you wrote a good one about the election. Nobody's paying attention to.
Well, I started out. I wanted to write about the Senate elections, which are crucial, because whoever becomes president. They're not going to get a cabinet. They're not going to get judges. They're not going to get treaties or important things passed if they don't control the Senate. And that may be what voters want, is a gridlock. So I think the Senate elections are very important, and things look on paper. They look great for Republicans. And I wanted to point this out. But it's probably closer than it should be. It's not going to be a landslide either way. Montana, I guess, just went towards leans Republican as opposed to toss up. They got a good candidate for a change in Montana. But the column ended up being more than I expected about the media. And it's coddling of Kamala Harris.
Yeah. It's a good column, and it's a good reminder that there's more at stake than just the White House. I mean, clearly that's important, but
and historically, Senate elections generally follow the pattern of the presidential election.
Generally speaking,
So if it's close on the president level, it may very well be close and could fall the wrong way for conservatives on the Senate issue. And it's 51-49 now.
Right.
So we wanted a little bit more of a majority there. And we're not going to have Mitch McConnell, who I know everybody's angry at him, but he's a genius politically. And people credit Trump for the Supreme Court majority, but without Mitch, we wouldn't have that majority. We wouldn't have the end of Roe Wade and a lot of other things.
That's absolutely correct. It's absolutely correct. So it's very important. Great column. Go over to redstate.com to read it. Andrew, do you have a joke for us this week?
I think I do. You give one. I'm going to have all to look it up.
Look this up. This is sort of an old joke. I like this joke, though. So John is a well-to-do bachelor, and he invited his mother over for dinner one night. And during the meal, Mom could not help but notice how attractive his housekeeper slash cook was. And she's kind of looking at him quizzically. And John says, look, Mom, I know what you're thinking, but I assure you that my relationship with the housekeeper is strictly professional. So about a week later, John discovers that the ladle, the gravy ladle, this really ornate silver gravy ladle, has been missing ever since his mother visited. And then he looks all over the house and he can't find it. And he says, sends his mother a note, says, Mom, I'm not saying you took the gravy ladle, and I'm not saying you didn't, but the fact remains that one's been missing since you've been here. And a day or so later, John gets a note from his mother. Says, John, I'm not saying you sleep with your housekeeper, nor am I saying you don't sleep with your housekeeper. The fact remains that if she were sleeping in her own bed, she would have found the gravy ladle by now.
Oh, I didn't expect that. Oh, that's a good one, Edward. That's a good one.
That remains.
Yeah, Mom's a wily one. I've got a couple. These are old. Seth Meyer says, Kamala Harris says she'll travel to Guatemala and Mexico to address the ongoing immigration crisis. She intends to find out once and for all how people like Ted Cruz keep getting in. And I got one other one. This is from Twitter, Blue Box Dave. He put it up. He said, my son's new joke. Knock, knock. Who's there? Kamala Harris. Kamala Harris who? I'm not currently answering questions.
I like that one. That's a good one.
Yeah, I like that one too.
All right, I got one more for you. Got one more I'm going to lay on you here. A doctor and a lawyer are talking at a party, and their conversation is constantly interrupted by people seeking free medical advice from the doctor, talking about their ailments, you know, what do you think this is? And after about an hour or so of this, the doctor gets really exasperated, and he asks the lawyer, what did you do to stop people from asking you for legal advice when you're not in the office? And the lawyer says, well, I give it to them, but I send them a bill later. The doctor says, oh, you know, that's an interesting idea. I think I'll try that out. So the next day, he prepares some bills for the people who are at the office. He goes out to his mailbox to put the bills in there, and he finds a bill from the lawyer. Oh, from jokesoftheday.net. That's both of them were jokesoftheday.net, but I was scrolling up and I saw that one. I thought, I got to tell Andrew that one because Andrew will appreciate it.
That's a good one. I like that. I like that.
All right, my friend. Well, we're going to do this again.
I got one true story to tell you. I had a friend who was a priest, Catholic priest, and he would travel with his collar. Mm-hmm. And every time he'd sit down, and people next to him in the airplane would always start sharing their troubles and expect him to give them advice. So he kept wearing his collar, of course, but finally, he sit down in the plane and they're putting their seatbelts on, and he turned to the person in the seat next to him and say, have you been saved? And he said that made things quiet for the entire flight.
Good. You know, and this is also a true story. Marcia and I had our pastor was a friend of ours. We'd have him over for dinner from time to time. He's a really great guy. Still a great guy. He's still around. We've moved, of course, so he's still up in Minneapolis, St. Paul. He talked about that, and he said he traveled with in both ways. Right, he would travel without his cleric on, and so people didn't realize he was a priest, and that was fine. But he had the same experience. If he traveled with this cleric on, then, which is what they call it, you know, the whole shirt thing. Actually, it's almost like a dickie. I mean, you can get them to wear it's a full shirt with the collar, but you can also get them so they're kind of like a dickie. And that's kind of what he used to like. He would wear Packers t-shirts under it. And he knew I was a Steeler fan, so he would show me that he'd show me he was wearing his Packers. Yeah.
That's evil priest.
Especially after the Packers beat the Steelers in the Super Bowl. He really enjoyed that one with me. And he finally decided that he really should wear the cleric, because if he was traveling and people were approaching him, then he felt that there was a pastoral need that needed to be addressed. And that was what his calling is. And so he just decided that, and I don't know if he stuck with it, because I don't think it's a hard and fast rule. I don't even think that, but he felt like he should really travel that way, because he felt that maybe God was putting that person in his path for a reason. And so he would just surrender his whatever, you know, personal time he had on travel. So, I mean, it's an interesting, I'm glad you brought that up, because I hadn't thought about that in a while. But I mean, he was a very pastoral guy. He just was. He's
okay. Tell the story, Ed.
That was it.
Oh, I thought there was a kicker.
No, I mean,
so he did. Well, you know, I could see his argument that there was a need possibly for him to fill. So he did. That's kind of nice.
But I like the way that the other guy handled it better.
Have you been saved?
Even better than putting your headphones on, right? The universal signal of don't bother.
Yeah. Or if you're a presidential candidate walking out faking a cell phone call with your earbuds in, talking into the phone so that reporters can't ask you questions. Hillary Clinton used to do that in the Capitol when she was a senator. She'd walk through with a cell phone up and it was no phone call at all.
Well, maybe Hillary's the one who taught that to her. I wouldn't be surprised if that was the case. But yes, we did bring it right back around to the election. So tonight, the debate. Next week, we'll talk about what happened. Andrew Malcolm, the prince of Twitter, the regent of redstate.com, getting ready to rumble tonight.
Thanks, Ed. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week.